drive through the tribal lands of the Khyber Pass was just as I remembered it when Baba and I had driven through back in 1974. The driver was a sullen man called Farid. Rahim Khan had warned me not to expect a warm welcome from those who stayed in Afghanistan and fought the wars. Farid was dressed much as I was, a rough woven woolen blanket wrapped over a grey piran tumban. I was also wearing a false beard, provided by a man Rahim Khan knew who specialized in weaving them for journalists. Rahim Khan had wanted me to stay in Peshawar to plan more thoroughly, but I knew I had to leave as soon as possible. I was afraid the appeal of my life in America would draw me back, that I'd let it tempt me away from this one last chance of redemption. As for Saraya, telling her I was going back to Afghanistan just wasn't an option. We'd crossed the border, and the signs of poverty were everywhere. "I feel like a tourist in my own country," I said.
"You still think of this place as your country?"
scoffed Farid.
"After 20 years of living in America?"
"I think a part of me always will. I grew up here." He snorted.
"Let me imagine, Aha Saab. You probably live in a big three-story house with a nice backyard that your gardener filled with flowers and fruit trees. All gated, of course. You had servants, probably Hazaras. And I bet my first son's eyes, this is the first time you've worn a pakol."
He pointed to an old man dressed in rags.
"That's the real Afghanistan, Oha Saib. You've always been a tourist here. You just didn't know it. What brings you back to Afghanistan anyway? Selling land? Selling a house? Before you run back to America and spend the money on family vacation in Mexico?"
"I'm going to Kabul to find a boy." I fished the photo of Sohrab and Hussein out of my pocket.
"What does this Hazara mean to you?"
"His father meant a lot to me. He's dead now." Farid blinked. "He was a friend of yours?" My instinct was to say yes, but there'd been enough lies already. He was my half-brother, my illegitimate half-brother. I want to take his son back to Peshawar. There are people there who take care of him. Farid rested his hand on my shoulder.
"You are an honorable man, Amir Aha, a true Afghan."
I cringed inside. As we neared the city, he said,
"Kabul isn't the way you remember it."
"So I hear." He gave me a look that said hearing isn't the same as seeing, and he was right. Because when Kabul finally did unroll before us, I was certain, absolutely certain, that he'd taken a wrong turning somewhere. Rubble and beggars, everywhere I looked. That was what I saw. I remembered the beggars in the old days, but these were children, some no older than 5 or 6. As I looked at them in their mothers' laps, it slowly dawned on me that the wars had made fathers a rare commodity in Afghanistan. The buildings that hadn't been entirely obliterated to rubble barely stood. "Where are the trees?" I asked.
"Snipers used to hide in them."
A sadness came over me. Returning to Kabul was like running into an old, forgotten friend and seeing that life hadn't been good to him. "Can you pull over?" I asked. We walked down the street a while. "Remember what the street smelled like in the old days?"
Farid smiled. "Lamb kebab. The only people who get to eat lamb now are the Taliban. Speaking of which, beard patrol."
A truck was approaching us, and that was the first time I saw the Taliban. I'd seen them on TV, in newspapers. But here I was, less than 50 feet away from them, telling myself that the sudden taste in my mouth wasn't unadulterated naked fear. Here they came, in all their glory. The red pickup idled past us. A handful of stern-faced young men sat on their haunches in the cab, Kalashnikovs slung on their shoulders. They all wore beards and black turbans. One of them twirled a whip in his hand. His roaming eyes fell on me, held my gaze. I'd never felt so naked in my entire life. Then the Talib spat tobacco-stained spittle and looked away. I found I could breathe again.
"What's the matter with you?"
Fareed hissed.
"Don't ever stare at them. Do you understand me? Never!"
We found the orphanage in the northern part of Kathaseth. A thin man with tiny eyes like black peas opened the door and glanced from me to Fareed.
"Salaam alaikum."
I showed him my photograph. "We're searching for this boy."
"Sorry, I never seen him."
"You barely looked at the picture, my friend," Fareed said.
The man studied the picture, handed it back.
"Sorry. Now, if you'll permit me, I have work to do."
He closed the door. I rapped with my knuckles. "Aha, please. We do not mean him any harm."
"Please, go away,"
came the voice. Fareed stepped up to the door.
"Friend, we are not with the Taliban. The man who is with me wants to take this boy to a safe place."
"I come from Peshawar," I said. "I knew Sohrab's father. His name was Hassan. The boy knows how to read and write, and he's good with a slingshot. There's hope for him, a way out. I'm his half-uncle." A moment passed, then a key rattled in the lock. The man's narrow face reappeared in the crack.
"You are wrong about one thing. He is great with a slingshot. Tucks it in the waist of his trouser everywhere he goes."
He invited us into his orphanage.
"There's very little shelter here. Almost no food, no clothes, no clean water. What I have in ample supply is children who've lost their childhood. But the tragedy is that these are the lucky ones. We are filled beyond capacity, and every day I turn away mothers who bring their children. You say there is hope for Sohrab. I pray you don't lie, Aha. But you may well be too late."
"What do you mean?" I asked.
"What I have to tell you is not pleasant. Not to mention that it may be very dangerous. There is a Talib official. He visits every month or two. He brings cash with him."
The man's shifty eyes fell on me, rolled away.
"Usually he'll take a girl, but not always."
"And you allow this?"
Fareed growled from behind me.
"What choice do I have?"
"You're the director.
There's nothing I can do to stop it. I haven't been paid in over 6 months. Everything I ever owned I sold to run this godforsaken place. You think I don't have family in Pakistan? I could have run like everyone else, but I didn't. I stayed for the sake of the children. If I deny him one, he takes 10. So I let him take one and leave the judging to Allah. I swallow my pride and take his filthy, dirty money. Then I go to the bazaar and buy food for the children."
Fareed dropped his eyes. "How do we find him?" I asked.
"Go to the Garzi Stadium tomorrow. You see him at halftime. He'll be the one wearing sunglasses."
A bustling crowd thronged the entrance tunnel of the stadium. We found a spot to sit just left of midfield. I remembered how green the playing field had been in the 70s, when Baba used to bring me to soccer games here. Now the pitch was a mess. There were craters everywhere, most notably a pair of deep holes in the ground behind the south end goalposts. And there was no grass. When the two teams finally took to the field, it was difficult to follow the ball for the cloud of dust. They brought them out shortly after the halftime whistle. A pair of dusty red pickup trucks rode into the stadium. The crowd rose to its feet. A woman in a green burqa sat in the cab of one truck, a blindfolded man in the other. Next to me, Fareed mumbled a prayer under his breath. A third truck met them at the end of the field. It was loaded with something in the back. I suddenly understood the purpose of those two holes behind the goalposts.
Do you want to stay? Fareed asked.
I'd never in my life wanted to be away from a place so badly. We have to stay.
When they'd forced the couple into the chest-deep holes, a chubby white-bearded cleric recited a prayer from the Quran into a microphone. I remembered something Baba had said to me years earlier.
Piss on the beards of all those self-righteous monkeys. They do nothing but thumb their rosaries and recite a book written in a tongue they do not even understand. God help us all if Afghanistan ever falls into their hands.
When the prayer was done, the cleric cleared his throat.
Brothers and sisters, we are here today to carry out Sharia. Every sinner must be punished in a manner befitting his sin. And what manner of punishment, brother and sister, befits the adulterer? How shall we answer those who throw stones at the windows of God's house? We shall throw stones back!
Next to me, Fareed was shaking his head.
And they call themselves Muslims.
A tall man in white stepped out of the third truck. When he faced our section of the crowd, I saw he was wearing dark round sunglasses, like the ones John Lennon wore.
That must be our man, Fareed said.
The tall Talib walked to the pile of stones they'd unloaded from the truck. He picked up a rock, and looking absurdly like a baseball pitcher on the mound, he hurled the stone at the blindfolded man. The woman screamed. I closed my eyes. The spectators, oh, accompanied each flinging of the stone. I don't know how much longer I sat with my face in my hands. I know that I only reopened my eyes when I heard people around me ask,
Mort, is he dead?
When the blooded corpses had been unceremoniously tossed into the backs of the red pickups, a few men with shovels hurriedly filled the holes. A few minutes later, the teams took the field. The second half was underway. After the game, the swiftness with which the appointment was set up surprised me. All Fareed had to do was tell one of the Talib that we had personal business to discuss with the Talib in the white. He nodded and shouted something to a man on the field who ran to the goalpost where the Talib in the sunglasses stood. I saw him look up. He nodded, and the messenger brought word back. The meeting was set. 3 o'clock.